Hello, everyone. Pastor Steve coming to you from the church pastoral office here. And it's a little bit rainy outside as I am recording for today's message. Welcome to your scatter group, and we're glad you've participated. We've had several great months of great Bible study and good discussion and prayer times. It's been meaningful and relational and very helpful and encouraging. So thank you for your good participation. Next week, we'll have one more official scatter group. This will be a preview of scatter groups, and then we'll have a time of a break for just helping out with host fatigue, and then we'll be reorganizing and looking for some more hosts to add. And I know several are looking forward to having their hosting in their houses, and so we thank you for that. So invite some people. Host right now, current host, if you would, invite some people to participate in next week's scatter group. And then for the next several weeks after that, we'll be having Pastor Rob bring some good messages about the holidays and how to deal with all the different things that's going on. Some good topical themes and messages that he'll bring. But it's been a great time studying the scriptures, in particular, the Kingmaker. We've looked at this entire year. This will be our message number 31. There's 31 chapters in this book, and we've seen a lot of good things and grown a lot in our walk with the Lord. And so thanks for being a part. Let's go ahead and pray, and then we'll dive into the last chapter of 1 Samuel. So Lord, we thank you for this opportunity we've had to learn, to grow, to develop, to walk with others through life in our scatter groups. We thank you for the small group discussion, the food that we could share, the fellowship, the stories we could give, and illustrations and life experiences that we could share with our groups. We thank you for the answered prayers and the times that we've had to offer these requests and the requests throughout this year to you. We do pray that you'll bless now this session and then the following, and as we reorganize and then start into next year, that you would just bless this effort of walking with you and walking with others with mutual encouragement. So we give thanks for this in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, 1 Samuel 31. We'll call this message a messy ending. And certainly there is a messy ending that takes place in the life of Saul. Samuel has already passed off the scene, and someone else is writing this down, even though it's the namesake of Samuel, of course. And the kingmaker is gone, but there's a king who is going to die in a very tragic way. And then in chapter 1 and 2 and 3, as you get into 2 Samuel, we'll find the new king emerges being David. One person wrote about Saul, before we read these verses, Saul was a hero of tragedy in the classical sense of the term. He had some good features, such as courage, generalship, modesty, and generosity. But he did not have single-minded tenacity. That was his tragic flaw, as one person stated. Even in his pursuit of David, at times it was half-hearted. He lacked the greatness of the later David, and nevertheless, we find David and others are truly lamenting the loss of King Saul. So let's read this passage here, beginning in verse 1. Now the Philistines fought against Israel, and the men of Israel fled from before the Philistines and fell down in Mount Gilboa, slain in Mount Gilboa. And the Philistines followed hard upon Saul and upon his sons, and the Philistines slew Jonathan and Abinadab and Melchishua, that's Saul's sons. And the battle went sore against Saul, and the archers hit him. They hit their target. They found their target, is the phrase here. They hit him. And he was sore wounded of the archers. So you could just imagine this arrow wound. Maybe the arrow is still partially impaled in him. Then said Saul unto his armor bearer, draw thy sword, thrust me through herewith, lest these uncircumcised come and thrust me through. It's kind of a religious expression. They were not circumcised because they were following after false gods, and the Hebrew God had told the Israelites to be circumcised. And so I don't want them to kill me and abuse me. That means to torture me. But his armor bearer would not, and he was sore afraid. Therefore Saul took a sword and fell upon it. So let me pause right here. If you have suicidal ideation and you are thinking about, not just like I'd like to die, but I'm thinking about how I want to die, or you have a suicide ideation or feelings, then get some help. You may feel defeated. Saul felt defeated here. You may feel discouraged. Saul was discouraged here as well. But suicide is not the answer. It's not the answer. And it's not the answer for you. God has a plan for your life still. And if Saul was obedient to the Lord, there would have been a grander plan in the scheme of things for him as well. But he was not following God like he should have. And so he feels defeated, and he tries to kill himself here. And when his armor bearer saw that Saul was dead, he fell likewise upon his sword and died with him. So Saul died and his three sons and his armor bearer and all his men that same day together. And when the men of Israel that were on the other side of the valley and they that were on the other side of Jordan saw that the men of Israel fled and that Saul and his sons were dead, they forsook the cities and fled, and the Philistines came and dwelt in them. And it came to pass on the morrow, so here's the next day, when the Philistines came to strip the slain, they found Saul and his three sons fallen in Mount Gibeah, and they cut off his head and stripped off his armor and sent into the land of the Philistines round about to publish it in the house of their idols and among the people. And they put his armor in the house of Ashtaroth, and they fastened his body to the wall of Bethshan. I've been to Bethshan, and I'll show you some pictures of that place in just a moment. But they are abusing the body of Saul by parading it around, mutilating it, and hanging it up for people to see. And when the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead, now these guys are some heroes, some brave men, heard of that which the Philistines had done to Saul, the valiant men arose and went all night and took the body of Saul and the bodies of his sons from the wall of Bethshan and came to Jabesh and burnt them there. And they took their bones and buried them under the tree at Jabesh and fasted 7 days. It's a tamarisk tree, a special tree they wanted to show honor by putting his bones under there. And these men of Jabesh-Gilead, the city, is about 10 miles from Bethshan. And so they go by night. It would have taken a little bit of time to get over there and then to take the dismembered bodies of Saul and his sons to bring them back. And they burned those bodies. Cremation was not a general Hebrew practice, except sometimes for criminals. In Joshua, we find some people who had transgressed, and so their bodies were burned. But it was probable that they burned Saul's body with his sons, Jonathan included, because of the mutilation that the Philistines were doing when they had the bodies all strung up. And you could just imagine how gruesome this scene is. The wall that the bodies are hung on, people are walking by and throwing things or maybe jabbing at him, and they had a very cruel society. And that's why Saul said, I don't want them to abuse me, I don't want them to torture me, so go ahead and kill me so I don't have to feel any of that. That's why he was saying that to his fellow soldier there. And so the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead, they remembered they had kind of a debt to Saul. When they were in trouble with the Philistines, it was Saul who came to fight them. Or actually, it was the Ammonites who had surrounded Jabesh-Gilead. And then Saul rallies the troops of Israel and goes to the rescue for them. And so they take the impaled bodies of Saul and his sons. They risk their lives in doing so, and they rescue the bodies and give a more proper burial. So why burn the bodies of Saul and his sons? Good question. It wasn't a Hebrew custom. Probably to show more honor so that the Philistines couldn't come back over and do more abuse to those bodies. When you think about this mutilation and things like that, that's actually against the law. And that's kind of what they were doing here in this case. So during the time of famine, later on, it's a lot later on, during the time of David, David moves the bones of Saul back to Saul's hometown. And we find that in 2 Samuel 21, verses 12 through 14. And David went and took the bones of Saul and the bones of Jonathan his son from the men of Jabesh-Gilead, which had stolen them from the street of Bethshan, where the Philistines had hanged them. When the Philistines had slain Saul in Gilboa, and he brought up from thence the bones of Saul and the bones of Jonathan his son, and he gathered the bones of them that were hanged, and the bones of Saul and Jonathan his son buried they in the country of Benjamin in Zelah, in the sepulcher of Kish his father, and they performed all that the king commanded, and after that God was entreated for the land. So that there's no more famine in the land after that. So God even wanted them to have a more proper burial in their family internment area. A lot of times you'll see in cemeteries the family has an internment area. And I was just at a cemetery yesterday. A lot of family in that family internment area were there. So is this the end of the story for Saul? Well, wait, there's more. Is this really the end? This messy ending, is this it? In 2 Samuel chapter 1, we get some more insight to this messy chapter of the end of Saul's life. Here we go in verses 2 through 10. You can look across the page if you want to. It came even to pass on the third day that, behold, a man came out of the camp from Saul with his clothes rent and earth upon his head. And it was so, when he came to David, he fell to the earth and did obeisance. And David said unto him, from whence comest thou? And he said unto him, out of the camp of Israel I am escaped. And David said unto him, how went the matter? I pray thee, tell me. And he answered that the people are fled from the battle, and many of the people also are fallen and dead, and Saul and Jonathan his son are dead also. And David said unto the young man that told him, how knowest thou that Saul and Jonathan his son be dead? And the young man told him and said, as I happened by chance upon Mount Gilboa, behold, Saul leaned upon his spear, and lo, the chariots and the horsemen followed hard after him. And when he looked behind him, he saw me and called to me and answered, here am I. And he said unto me, who art thou? And I answered him, I am an Amalekite. And he said unto me again, stand, I pray thee, upon me and slay me, for anguish has come upon me, because my life is yet whole in me. So I stood upon him and slew him, because I was sure that he could not live after that he was fallen. And I took the crown that was on his head and the bracelet that was on his arm, and have brought them hither to my Lord. Now, evidently, Saul, when he fell on his own sword, did not die immediately. And maybe he whispers or calls out with whatever breath he has left to this Amalekite and asks him to finish him off. Finish me off, is what he's asking. And some commentators will say, well, this boy's lying about this. This Amalekite is lying about this, but evidently he has proof. He has the crown. This is 3 days later. We know the next day after the death of Saul that the Philistines go to collect the different items from Saul, but evidently this young guy has the crown and the bracelet, these items that he mentions to David. Now, I like J. Vernon McGee. He gives a description about this, and I want you to think about how ironic this is that an Amalekite finished Saul off. We're going to find that Saul spared the Amalekites, he said, and Samuel rebuked him for it. He told Saul to obey is better than sacrifice, and to hearken and the fat of rams. God wanted obedience. But when Samuel came into camp, he heard the bleating of the sheep. He saw all the goods and the stuff that people had kept. And he looks at Saul and says, to obey is better than sacrifice. And why is King Agag still alive? Why is the Amalekite king still alive? And, well, the people wanted me to do this. And this was some pretty good stuff. And I wanted to show mercy to Agag. He had all these different reasons. And God said, to obey is better than sacrifice. Why was Saul's ending so messy? And I suggest to you, it was because of his disobedience to God. Why was it so messy? Because of his disobedience to the Lord. Was this the Amalekite, this young man, was he speaking the truth? Or did he really come and find Saul all the way dead? Or was he still hanging on with a little bit of breath, a little bit of life? J. Vernon McGee says, I tend to agree with this, I am of the opinion that when this Amalekite found Saul, he had fallen on his sword, yet he was still alive. And so Saul is finished off by the Amalekite. He tries to kill himself, and he does a good job. He's dying, but this man makes sure that he's all the way dead. How ironic. Also a sense of poetic justice that this people group that God had condemned, that Saul was supposed to finish off and to exterminate because of their rebellion against God and against God's people, that Saul didn't do that. And it was at their hand. If you know Israelite history, there's going to be a common theme of these Amalekites popping back up. The Agagites, even by the time of Queen Esther and during the Persian Empire, where they come back and are fighting against God's people. It's all because of Saul, because of his disobedience to the Lord. Disobedience is normally preempted with pride. 1 Samuel 15:22, Samuel said, "Hath the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to hearken to God, than the fat of rams." So the enemies of God's people, the Philistines, here in Beth Shan, dismember, abuse, and parade about the body of Saul. They hang the bodies up on the city wall for people to see, and no doubt they're throwing things, maybe stabbing and mutilating the body. Mutilating a corpse is, in America today, it's a 12-year maximum penalty in prison, along with a $25,000 fine. It's considered a Class F felony. So if it was back then, it's a Class F felony. These guys were not doing good to this corpse of Saul and his sons. Beth Shan is an impressive Philistine town. I've been there. It's a beautiful ancient ruins a lot through there. Here's some pictures I'll show you. Here's some pictures of Beth Shan today. It was the capital of the Decapolis region of 10 Philistine groups of cities. And in these pictures, there's some heated bathrooms. There's heated bathing areas and saunas and spas. It's amazing the technology the Romans, when they rebuilt it, that they included all of these things. And there's an old city wall. You can see off in the distance past all of those colonnades. I have a stone. Here's a stone today, and this little stone just came off of one of those colonnades. The tour guide was like, "Hey, take some of these rocks around here." This was part of one of these colonnades that you see in that picture there. But off in the distance, you see that little grassy hillside? That would have been around the area that the wall back in Saul's day was located. And it was on that wall that Saul and his sons were hung for all the people to see. What a messy and tragic ending. Why did Saul have such a messy ending? It's because of his disobedience to the will of God. Now, Christian friends, we can see that our lives are messy at times, and it may not be because of a Philistine battle, but there are spiritual battles and emotional battles and addictions and temptations that all of us face. And how we respond to those things really make a difference in how our lives will turn out. Here's three considerations to avoid a messy ending. Plan to have a good ending, purpose to age with grace, and pray to the Lord for a good ending. First off, plan to have a good ending. Even with all the things that Saul did wrong, he did some things right. And there's still some honor no matter how you end, because you're a person created in the image of God. Saul had come to the rescue of the people of Jabesh-Gilead, and they did not forget. And friends, people will not forget the good things that you do towards them. And you can know for certain that God does not forget. I encourage you, if you want to plan for a good ending, then plant some seeds of goodness by being good and kind to other people. People will not forget your labor of love. God is not unrighteous to forget your work and labor of love, which you have showed towards his name, and that you have ministered to the saints and do minister. God won't forget. The people you serve will not forget. There will be a day when you need other people to care for you. Plan ahead for that. There'll be a day when you cannot walk steps or cook your own food or even clean up yourself, and go ahead and plan ahead for that. And one of the best ways to plan ahead is to invest in good relationships. These men of Jabesh-Gilead felt an obligation because Saul was good to them. They wanted to be good to Saul. Even though he was already dead, they wanted to show some honor. I've heard of older men and women who are so disgusting and cruel and unkind that their people don't want anything to do with them and they're alone. And no one wants to be near them. And even the people who are paid to care for them in some places, they don't want to go because they're just so unkind and cruel. Because of a present selfishness and unkindness in the present, then their future is really in jeopardy because of that. So invest in the people around you today. Plan to have a good ending. Number two, purpose to age with grace. I think it's a great way to pray too. Lord, help me to age with grace. Our dreams can be dashed. Our childhood dreams really should be adjusted as we get older. Our plans are changed. Our bodies fall apart. We change our perspectives as we age. And we may even lose our mental faculties. But what can you do to age with grace? Let me give you four ways at least to age with grace. You could adjust expectations, be flexible, adjust your expectations, adapt to new situations. So things change, technologies change, needs change in our life and in what we're doing. And so be flexible with that, adapt to the new situations, adopt new goals and dreams. Adopt new goals and dreams. I've already inferred that our childhood dreams should be changing as we get older. And we could have more of a God-centered dream and idea of what God would have us to do. So be flexible with your goals and dreams. Absorb the Bible. If you let God's words dwell in you, then when your body is failing and your mind is even falling apart, then those words will still come to mind and kind of help you stay glued together emotionally, relationally, and spiritually. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with grace in your hearts to the Lord. David knew about this in Psalm 119:107. I am afflicted very much. Quicken me, make me alive, renew me. Quicken me, O Lord, according unto thy word. So the more Bible you have in you, that will actually help you age more gracefully as you get older. And then number three, pray to the Lord for a good ending. Saul was so far away from God that a few chapters earlier, he went to a witch to try to discern what to do. And he said, God's not listening to my prayers anymore. I don't have Samuel to talk to anymore. And I don't know what to do. He was so far away from God that he knew that God was not hearing his prayers. And he wasn't going to be praying anymore. I encourage you, get close to God. Start to pray today. Pray to the Lord for a good ending. Seek the Lord today. Turn back to Him. Don't delay to open up the Bible and read God's words and then respond back to God in prayer. Isaiah 55:6 says, "Seek ye the Lord while He may be found. Call ye upon Him while He is near." And Matthew 6:6, "But when thou prayest," Jesus said, "enter into thy closet. And when thou hast shut thy door, pray to thy Father which is in secret, and thy Father which seeth in secret shall reward thee openly." You see, Saul's messy ending was public for everybody to see, both the Hebrew people and the Philistine people, the Gentile people as well. And everyone saw that day, and they heard about the day when Saul disobeyed the Lord, spared Agag, kept the sheep and all the stuff. You see, Saul was openly disobedient to God, and now his messy ending is open and evident for all to see as well. Friends, it's a lot better to obey God than to try to make up for it later with some sacrifices. God would rather us to be obedient in the first place. So why did Saul have such a messy ending? It was because of his disobedience to the Lord. Friends, let's plan to have a good ending. Purpose to age with grace and pray to the Lord for a good ending. Please take some time to answer these thoughtful questions, discuss them, give some application if you would, and then please take some time to pray for one another. Thanks so much for participating. God bless.